does your principal support your principles? Obviously playing with the two spellings of the word principal. Ethical investing or socially responsible investing is a relatively new territory for discussion, but it's a growing interest, I believe, among people who think they ought to put their money where their conscience is. All of us are involved in some kind of investing, whether we make our own individual investing decisions or have them made for us by typically pension fund managers. And that's an interesting side to this whole discussion. How do we influence those who make decisions about investing our retirement funds for us, whether we're in church plans or school teacher plans or whatever, or labor union plans? The largest single block of investment money in the United States of America is retirement funds. As a block, that's billions and billions, in fact, hundreds of billions of dollars that is in our market economy, in the stock market and in the bond market and in other places. And most of us have very little direct influence on how the decisions are made regarding the investment of those funds. But we do have a lot of influence on how we manage our own investments, where we make decisions ourselves. And that includes everything from money market funds in which we may put money, or mutual funds, to credit cards. There are even now some socially responsible credit card operations that we'll talk about. Let me say some introductory things about the territory of ethical investing. It is the concept of investing in conformance with one's principles. It seeks a double bottom line, not a single bottom line, but two bottom lines. Economic return, it is interested in economic return, and a social dividend, or a payoff in terms of what one believes and wants to support, or what one does not want to support and therefore does not wish to invest in. It asserts as a premise that investing is never value-free. It is never a value-free activity, whether we realize it or not. There are always values attached to investment decisions, as there are to almost everything else human beings do. It also has as a premise that there is no such thing as a totally pure investment. If you're looking for a pure place to put your money, forget it. There probably isn't one. I've never been able to find one that is totally untouched by the consequences of human sin and selfishness and greed and those kinds of things. So it's a relative, as with most ethics, it's a relative, it's a matter of relative better or worser decision. Those who are concerned for ethics as well as economics want to make private gain more closely coincident with the public good. That's another way of talking about it. Or, can I do good while doing well? Some are willing to take a lower return, a lower economic return, if there is a social dividend as well. And my view is that we have to be willing to expect that there may be, not all the evidence is in because we don't have long-term trend lines in this area, but I believe we need to be willing to accept a somewhat lower economic return as a trade-off for the social dividend that we are seeking if we're into this kind of investing. Socially responsible investing is not all that new, although as a movement, it's relatively new, maybe the last 15 years or so since the first social funds in money markets and mutual funds were established. We'll get into that a little bit more later when we talk about some specific funds. I think it is not a fad. I think it is here to stay, and I think it is part of the evolution of the democratic capitalist system. It is another element in the evolving market economic system of which we're a part. In an earlier stage, to influence the economy and the system with social goals, we typically used legislation, and we still do. The law intervened, for example, when the society decided to adopt child labor legislation, to say it was a social good not to have young children children under 16 in our society, basically, employed in sweatshops. We did that through legislation. We adopted monopoly control legislation, another way that the common good intervened with the pure market system. Worker rights, product liability laws would be additional examples of using legislative tools to intervene in the pure market economy. Incidentally, I have a one-liner for you. If you don't get anything else out of this session, you can carry this home. I don't know to whom to attribute it. I don't know where it came from, but I like it. Under capitalism, man exploits man. Under communism, it's the other way around. Okay? You can take that with you. The present stage in the evolution of market capitalism includes at least this element that we're talking about this morning, an effort to transfer private mores and behavior to the capitalist system. Law is not necessarily a good way to do that. Law can intervene to stop something negative from happening, but it's very difficult through legislation to intervene in the market system in a way that reflects positive goals of individuals, ethical objectives of individuals. Private behavior decisions on investing, I believe, can bring about gradual change in the system, and I think we're seeing examples of that already, as with economic pressure through investments on South Africa, with regard to South Africa and South Africa's role in the world community. Because the world market system is a single economic system. Well, there are three broad strategies in socially responsible investing, it seems to me. One is to avoid companies whose behavior or products one dislikes, to screen out companies or segments of the economy that one doesn't want to support. Now, for a long time, individuals have done that with regard to liquor and tobacco. From the 19th century already, that was being done. It was being done typically by churches that didn't want to invest in liquor or tobacco industry, and so didn't put any of their investment funds there. That's rather old. There's a newer list of agenda items, of course, and we'll talk about some of those in a minute. But avoiding companies whose behavior one dislikes or does not wish to support is one strategy. Another strategy, and that's relatively simple to do. You can say, well, I don't want to invest in any companies that are in South Africa. And you tell your broker that, and you can screen that out. I think much more difficult, but probably much more fruitful in the long run, is actively investing in companies or activities that one wants to support. And I think the best illustration of that for me is community economic development. Let's say you want actively to support economic development in rural America, where there may not be adequate capital through the normal channels, because people aren't taking the risk of investing, let's say, in rural America, for whatever reasons. Now, I'm not talking about farming here. I'm talking about rural but non-farming enterprises, job-creating activities in rural America. I don't know, maybe starting a new patio and porch furniture firm in rural Minnesota or something like that. That would be an example. You want to support that. So you look for ways of putting your money into that kind of capital, making that kind of capital available. I say that's more difficult to do, but I think in the long term, more productive, more fruitful. What's often called a positive screen. Instead of screening out something, screening in something. You put on a screen and you say, I want to invest in these kinds of activities as an intentional and deliberate move. And a third strategy would be investing in companies one wishes to change or to influence via shareholder leverage. Now, it's hard for individuals to think in terms of influencing a company, but it's not hard to think of individuals collectively influencing a company, as with the great mass of pension investments that a labor union or even a church denomination may have, or a teacher's pension fund. The New York State Teachers Union has massive resources to invest, and in recent years has been using it, along with church investors and some others, to try to influence companies in their behavior through shareholder resolutions. Well, that's a third broad strategy, investing deliberately in companies that one wants to change or to influence. Well, the social responsibility in investing movement began about 18 years ago in the early 70s. Pax World, P-A-X World, the Latin word for peace, was the first mutual fund to screen for social purposes. It was established in 1970. Calvert was the first money market fund. It also came in the early 70s. Working Assets was the first social purpose credit card, and I was going to bring it along and show it to you because Hertha and I have it, but I left it up in the room. You want to go get it?
I suppose people don't know what credit cards look like.
Well, they do. I don't think you have to go get it. It's You don't have to. No, it just says Working Assets Visa. You don't have to get it, Hertha. Hertha.
Oh, she's just upstairs. That's not.
She won't find it because I took it out of her purse, put it somewhere else, and she's not going to find it. I put the address for Working Assets Visa card on the board, and it's almost impossible to read it. But if you want to pick it up later, you can come up, copy it. Also, the phone number is there, and. I put it there because it's not on the materials I'm going to hand out to you in a minute. But let me tell you what Visa Working Assets does with its Visa card. It puts $2 for each new member and 5 cents for each transaction. Every time you use the card, a nickel, at no charge to the user, goes into a pool. That pool is shared among organizations that work for peace, human rights, environmental concern, etc. Now, they, somewhere in San Francisco, I guess, make the decision about which organizations will benefit. The individual, as far as I know, has no influence on that, although you might be able to write them and suggest your favorite organization. But they have, in recent years, included such groups as Amnesty International, Greenpeace, SANE, and the Environmental Defense Fund. So if that appeals to you and you use a credit card and want to apply for theirs, the address is here. There are three basic categories of people in the universe of socially responsible investing. There are the vendors of socially responsible investments, those who have investments to or places to invest to offer you. There are the buyers or the investors. And there are the information providers. A new sub-industry has grown up among researchers and communicators. And one of the best sources of information on it, keeping up to date on it, is the first address on the board, Social Investment Forum in Boston. Its address and phone number are there. They publish a directory, updated annually. You didn't find it, did you? Well, I tried to get you to come back because I was going to tell you you needed something else. I took it out of your purse and put it in a folder, and that's where it is.
No, I really needed
to. Social Investment Forum also has a newsletter, and you can subscribe to their newsletter, and I think it comes monthly and gives you updated information on the field. Well, where are these investments put? The territory can be broken down into two broad streams, within the market and outside the market. The market meaning the stock market, the bond market, and others outside the market. Outside the market, community loan funds are probably the largest single example of non-market investment places. A typical fund will identify a project needing capital. And they'll do that for you for the period and at the interest you wish. You might say, I want to get 6% return for 3 years. And the fund may respond by saying, well, how about 5.5% for 5 years? And you can negotiate. And you put your money there. There's a National Association of Community Loan Funds that provides a centralized information service on such funds. There's an Anamin Loan Fund that I'm aware of that serves four upper Midwest states. And typically they put the money in community economic development enterprises. And their record has been fairly good, but it's risky because there's no assurance. There's no government insurance protecting your investment. There are private neighborhood development banks. South Shore Bank in Chicago was probably the earliest, working in the Southside Black community. Because it's a bank, it's regulated by the government, and thus it's more able to provide security than a community loan fund, for example. But it's also less flexible in what you can support through it. But the American Lutheran Church, back in the late 60s already, began putting some investment money into a series of minority-owned banks as one way of trying to put some of the church's money where its mouth had been on the social desirability of supporting minority enterprise. There are three that are within the market: money markets, mutual funds, and individual securities. So those are sort of the examples of the territory that's available, and there's more information on all of that than we have time to go into this morning in what I'm going to hand out to you. This is a market-driven industry. It is happening and it is growing because more and more investors are demanding screened investment opportunities. More and more people are saying to their brokers, I don't want to put any of my investment money into companies operating in South Africa, or I don't want to put any money into companies that make nuclear weapons or chemical weapons or other weapons of mass destruction. And some are saying, I don't want to put my money into any kind of military weaponry. Depending, I guess, on whether the investor is a total pacifist or a just unjust war ethicist. But you get those kinds of concerns. Some are saying, I don't want to put my money in any environmentally polluting industry. So it's happening, and the market is beginning to respond to it, I believe, because people are asking for those opportunities. It is not an easy business. Community redevelopment especially is not a quick way to make money, though money can be made therein, and that has been demonstrated. I think it is not an area to be complacent about regarding future direction. As I said, it's relatively easy to screen out things one doesn't like, but the flip side has a less clear commitment. And it's still a mere trickle of all investing that is done in our economy. It's growing, but it's still very small. Some say about 0.1%, $1 in 1,000. It's performing relatively well. Ethical investing is, socially screened investments, though more years of experience are needed to draw any kind of general and long-range conclusions. Newsweek in June of a year ago, June of 88, did a little piece on social investing, and I want to quote some of the conclusions from Newsweek a year ago. They were reflecting on what had happened in the market plunge of the previous October 19th, October 87. And one analyst said, in boom times, a social investing fund doesn't make as much money as a high-growth fund. But when you have a disaster like last October, you come out much better. And then the Newsweek story concludes that Calvert, one of the social investment funds, dropped a mere 8% on the October 19th, 1987 plunge, whereas the market as a whole dropped 22%. So it seems that social funds have fewer peaks and valleys for some reason, and there's speculation about why that is so. Newsweek goes on, the performance of individual funds is still mixed, but most are now outperforming indicators such as the Standard & Poor's 500, and several have become outright stars. The Parnassus Fund has jumped 29% this year, that's 1988, and is the third best performer of 1,400 funds tracked by Investors Daily. Calvert ranks third among Lipper Analytical Services' 39 balanced funds for the year ending March 88. Social investing proponents say the funds succeed because the qualities that make companies unattractive to them also make for bad long-term investments, entirely apart from social considerations. Robert Zevin, Calvert's portfolio strategist, says firms with bad labor relations or environmental policies tend ultimately to pay for it. Then there's a warning. Skeptics warn that today's smart fund might tumble on the next turn of the business cycle. Anytime you limit a portfolio's choices with any kind of screen, anytime you limit a portfolio's choices, you eventually limit its performance, says analyst Michael Lippert. Well, I can just share, this is anecdotal, it doesn't prove anything, but the experience of Hertha and myself, we have been in Pox World and in Calvert for several years now. And we've also had some IRAs in other non-social funds. And in the October experience and since October of 87, our two social funds have done much better than the others. And it's been rather dramatic, the difference. And I think that bears out what various analysts have been saying in the relatively short experience we've had with social purpose funds in the last decade or so. They seem to be doing reasonably well. But the next time there's a plunge in the stock market, it could be different. Who knows? We have to have more experience before we can say conclusively. So I don't think one should go into it because one expects to do better in the stock market or the bond market or anywhere else than in a non-screened activity, investment activity. If you go into it because you have a social goal as well as an economic goal. A quick word on church pension funds, and then I'll conclude with some comments on resources. I don't want to spend the bulk of our time talking about divestment. That's been dealt with in other forums at Holden and in other places. But let me just say, as one part of this movement toward more social concern attached to investing decisions, the ELCA, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, pension plan, since the new church was organized January 1, 88, provides three social purpose funds for plan members to elect. You can put your money, if you wish, in unscreened funds, non-social purpose funds, and the great majority of the pension money is still there. Or you may elect, as I have done and some other plan members I know have done, that I've talked to about it, to put all or some of your money into social purpose funds. There are three of them. One is equities, which is stocks. Another is bonds. And a third one is balanced. It was recently created. It's a combination of the two, some equities and some bonds. And you may elect, I think it's in 10% segments. I believe it's in 10% segments. So you can go 100% in one of those, or you can go 90% in one of those and 10% in a regular fund for comparison purposes, which is what we've done, just so we have a comparison on how the two are doing. What do they screen in or out? Well, that's still in process of development, but the latest word I have is that the ELCA social purpose funds for pension plan members screen out South Africa, weapons of mass production, which is defined as nuclear, chemical, biological, weapons that have a difficult time discriminating between combatants and non-combatants. They don't screen out all military production, but they screen out weapons of mass destruction, and companies that do that, like Honeywell, would be an example of that. They screen out environmental companies with bad environmental records and companies with bad employment records. And that's usually measured in terms of treatment of women and persons of color, in terms of promotion, and so forth. What is positively screened in? Well, this they're still working at because it's very hard to define, but they're trying to add to the negative screens, a positive screen that will direct money to community economic development in particularly low-income communities. How are those funds doing? Well, they're still short of 1% of the total, I'm told. The total in the ELCA pension portfolio is now over $15 billion. The total in the social purpose funds is less than 1%, which means it's about $100 million. But $100 million is still real money. You know, it's percentage-wise not a lot, but it's still real money, okay? So I think eventually, and as more education about the social purpose funds gets around, that has to be responded to by individual pension plan member decisions. So it's kind of like a personal investment decision, even though it's processed collectively. As more people learn about what those funds can accomplish for one, and what they you know, what they represent, and even the fact that they exist, because that's not yet generally known, I think they will grow. One of the problems for their growth is that the pension board believes it is not its role to promote them. And I think they're probably right. But it's somebody's role to promote them, and I've been urging people elsewhere in the ELCA establishment to at least provide educational information, more than the pension board has done, about those funds and actually do advocacy for them. And I think the Office for Church and Society, for example, could appropriately do that kind of work. And they're looking at it, considering it. It'd be interesting to hear in discussion from any of you who are ELCA pension plan members how much you know about them and whether you've made a decision to invest there. I don't want to embarrass anybody by asking for a poll, but if you want to volunteer some information on that, please do. Finally, resources. I've already said the best source of ongoing information about the social investment territory is the Social Investment Forum, and that's the first address up there. Secondly, there is a very good book called Ethical Investing by Domini and Kinder, and I have copies of a description of it with an order form here. There are only about 10 copies. I think what I'll do is pass some each way, and please, you can look at it, but if you don't plan to order the book, don't take it. And then those who want it may have it. And finally, this book, which is available in the Holden Bookstore, is a collection of essays that I put together a couple years ago on the Catholic Bishop's Letter on the Economy. The last chapter in it, which is one I wrote, deals with community economic development and how to put together our theology of supporting economic development among low-income people with our investment money, both church money and individual church member money. And you might find that chapter instructive on that issue. It's called The Poor in the Church's Backyard. God, Goods, and the Common Good. And then I have 20 copies of a summary of all of the funds, mutual funds, and other investment opportunities that are socially concerned in a two-page sheet. This is reproduced on what is called Holden recycled paper, which means the backside of each sheet has nothing to do with the subject matter. It comes from another use, and instead of throwing paper away, that's the way Holden recycles paper. So you can ignore what's on the back, or you can read it if you want, but it doesn't have anything to do with this topic. But on the two front sides of the sheet, headed investment options, is the outline of this material. And there are 20 of those, so again, those I hope who are most interested in the subject will take it. And those the rest of you can glance at it and pass it on. Well, let me stop there and invite any of you to share out of your own experience in this area. I know that some of you have been trying to do this and trying to look for information. Some of you said before we began that it was very difficult to get your stock brokers to provide information because they either don't believe in it or don't know much about it. I think that's gradually changing. And in larger firms now, at least in the big metropolitan areas, almost every stock firm has at least one person who is quite well informed about social investing. But it may not yet be true everywhere. So what's been your experience with that? And any other concerns you have, we can now talk about. Bob?
Before you scroll to the web, I'm making a comment about the how some of the social investment agencies and vehicles get past the prudent man rule.
Well, the prudent man rule, or as we now try to say, the prudent person rule, although in legal language it's still the prudent man, as I understand it, applies only to people who act as trustees for other people's money. It does not apply to anybody else. It applies only to those who manage, for example, pension funds for present and future retirees of an organization, like those who manage a labor union's pension fund or a teacher's pension fund or a church pension fund. The prudent man requirement is that only, and the way it's usually been interpreted, at least by lawyers and courts, is that only economic considerations may be used in weighing investment options, and that you must invest as a trustee for other people's money, as you would if it were your own money and you wanted to get the best possible return, given considerations of risk and, all the considerations that go into investment decisions that have economics as the only bottom line. That's the prudent person rule. It does not apply other than to trustees who are managing other people's money. With your own money, of course, you're free to make decisions. But if the individual plan member makes the decision to route his or her money into a social purpose fund, the trustees of the pension fund are off the hook. They did not make that decision for you. You made that decision for yourself. That's entirely legal. And, of course, it's on that basis that certain things can be screened out. If you tell the ELCA pension fund managers that you want to go into the social purpose equity fund, then it'll be put in places that don't invest in South Africa or companies that are not in South Africa. It'll be put in companies that are not making nuclear weapons components, etc. But you made the decision. They didn't.
Yes.
I think probably two reasons. It's a very fair question. There's been quite a bit of interest, for example, in recent years in eliminating investment in companies that are in Northern Ireland. Or some have said we ought to eliminate investment in support for Israel, for example.
Well, how about but, the countries that have genocide and murder and that really is their official country?
Well, give me some examples.
Well,
Which countries are you talking about?
All right.
Genocide is an official policy of the government of Nigeria?
Genocide, you said maybe some countries. That's murder there. Abyssinia, Ethiopia.
Well, I think there are two reasons.
Quite a few other countries.
China, yeah. Well, I think there are two reasons. I think one reason is there's been an organized, very active lobby with regard to South Africa and apartheid around the world, not just in the United States, for a long time. Yeah, right, right. That's simply a reality. There has been a very organized effort to bring economic pressure. And I think partly fueled by the people in South Africa with whom the churches are in contact, in particular, the black Christians and some of the white Christians, who say this is the only hope for change in South Africa short of violence, short of a violent overthrow of the present regime. Economic pressure is about all we have. So that's one reason. There is an organized effort, and there's not an organized campaign like that, anything like that with regard to any other country. I think the second reason is U.S. and European economic investment in South Africa is very large. It's not nearly as large in China or Nigeria. Or it's visible.
There's a lot of oil there.
In Nigeria.
Yes.
Yeah. Or you could say, what about Iran? Well, the fact is there's very little U.S. corporate presence in Iran today, if any. There may not be any. So South Africa is a target for those two reasons, I think. There is U.S., almost every major U.S. company has been in South Africa. Some have recently left under pressure, but they have been there. And it's true with Britain and German and other corporate presence as well. Yeah.
Investing in China?
I would expect so, yeah. I think the investment in China by outside corporate enterprise has just been beginning in the last several years. It's been growing. I know 3M of the Twin Cities where I live has been going into China. And I'm sure there'll be some pressure on 3M, at least not to invest more for the present, and maybe some pressure on 3M to withdraw. I expect that. I think it will also depend on what happens in China in the next period. If some dramatic change in government came and the present policies were repudiated, I think that would have an effect. But yeah, I think that pressure is going to be there. Well, what about experiences you've had with social investing, those of you who've been dabbling in it? You mean our purchase of government securities?
Yeah, like there's funds that have mostly government securities in it, or if you invest in a treasury bill or a savings bond.
My understanding is it goes into the general treasury, which, like my tax dollar, if I pay a dollar in taxes, you can't say that it goes any one place. It goes everywhere. There's federal spending, including a lot for debt service because of the deficit.
Right.
So whatever government earns from sale of securities to us, the interest from that, I think, goes into the general treasury and benefits all government programs proportionately. Federal. Others? Anybody want to talk about their own experience? Okay, I think if you're concerned about that or any other one issue, the best source of help on how to avoid investing in such companies is a service like Social Investment Forum. There is another service that has done work jointly for all the churches and the Catholic orders, the Protestant denominations and the Catholic orders, and that's the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. It may be on the list I sent around. I'm not sure. Is it there? ICCR? Based in New York? If not, I'll give you its address. The Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility is the coalition of Protestant denominations and Catholic orders that does research together for them with regard to their own investment portfolios and their own shareholder activity.
Riverside Drive.
Yeah, ICCR.
It's there.
Is it there? 475 Riverside Drive.
Yep.
That is where, for example, annually, those churches that wish to come together to file a shareholder action with a given company will put their concerns together and collectively file a shareholder action with a company asking it to do something. A lot of the work has been in regard to South Africa in the last years, but they also work with environmental concerns, with employment practices, with they probably also work with companies that do questionable things with animals. The infant formula issue some years ago, when the Nestle boycott was going on, that got a lot of visibility. There was a boycott of Nestle because it was a Swiss-based firm. And there was no way to get at Nestle, from outside of Switzerland at least, with shareholder actions. But the other companies, the U.S. companies, American Home Products, Bristol-Myers, and I think there was a third one, which?
Beechnut.
Was it Beechnut? Can't remember. But there were three U.S. companies that were targeted and could be reached by church-sponsored shareholder actions because they were U.S. firms and we had investments in them. And so that strategy was used and is still used with companies in which the U.S. Churches have investments, and that's coordinated through ICCR. Typical shareholder resolution asks the company to stop doing something, like get out of South Africa, or stop selling your product to police and military in South Africa. The ALC some years ago had a Xerox resolution asking for that. We asked Xerox, this was before we asked Xerox to leave, we asked Xerox to stop selling to police and military. That's a route that doesn't usually win a victory. If victory is 51% of the shares voted with the resolution, but it has other objectives. It usually does some educational, has some educational impact with the company and maybe with the constituency, and it at least gets the attention of management. They don't like to have to deal with those resolutions. And if a resolution gets 10, 12, 15% of the shares, that's considered a significant chunk of shareholder opinion. And sometimes companies will then negotiate a settlement with the shareholders so they don't come back another year with it. I can remember shareholder resolutions that ask companies to begin giving a certain percentage of their business to minority-controlled enterprises. And minority was usually defined as persons of color, but sometimes also women. Enterprises that are controlled by vendors, people who sell to the company a product or a service, to target a certain percentage of that. It's like the quota system in employment, very much like that. And there has been some success with that. Companies have sometimes agreed, even before it went to a shareholder vote, to do that, what they were being asked. In effect, they've settled out of court. That would be an example, I think, of a positive, not to stop doing something, but to start doing something. Yeah. So he'd kept your name in the file somewhere as one interested in a social fund, obviously.
And I asked him why they were doing it now, why they were handling that fund now, and he said, well, we've had enough inquiries and enough interest in it, and definitely to their own self-interest, they are now handling it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I didn't invest any money.
What about companies like insurance companies that also have large amounts of money to invest?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't invest, we didn't buy a Lutheran Brotherhood policy because when they said, where are you investing all this money? And they were in a lot of companies that we just really had questions about it and asked, is there some alternative that they would do? And the fellow thought we were all but nuts.
Yeah.
And I said finally, I'm sorry, but I just won't do it. And so they lost our business, but that's another whole area. And I'm not even sure if you have any influence at all. And it was especially dismaying to me that there was no alternative. I probably don't know enough. I know I don't know enough about insurance, but it was Lutheran Brotherhood of all things. I thought you'd have some empathy for that in that direction.
It's a very good point. To my knowledge, neither AAL, Aid Association for Lutherans, nor Lutheran Brotherhood has anything like a social purpose. They both have money markets that you can invest in, as well as buying life insurance. I mean, they're becoming fairly complete financial services. But to my knowledge, at this moment, neither of them has anything like that. And my guess is it's because very few of their constituents have asked for it. There aren't enough of you saying to them what you said. So I don't think they operate any different than any other segment of the investment world. And they will respond, my guess is, when there are enough people who have a different view and a different value and who say we'd like to have available something that screens out or screens in, something that we believe in. Just a little footnote, it has nothing to do directly with investing, but it may interest you to know that Aid Association for Lutherans, within the last month, announced that it was going to stop a practice that it had been carrying on for years with its local groups and its agents, which was to hand out imprinted styrofoam cups for church use. They're going to stop doing that because of pressure from both their own employees in the company who were getting anxious about that and from people who were using them in local churches and who said this is not a good practice. It's not good for the name of Aid Association for Lutherans to have your name printed on styrofoam. And so they've now announced that they're going to stop it. And my guess is that was a direct response to constituency influence. So I think any institution can be changed if enough voices are raised, and it's in its economic interest to make a change. Yes, you. Mm-hmm. TIAA, CREF has. I've never known what it stood for. I don't know if you know, but.
Teachers Insurance Annuity Association or something. College Retired Equity Fund.
Okay. All right. That's
close enough.
That's very good. Yeah. It's a huge fund. It's a lot of bucks. It has been quite active in recent years with church investors in filing shareholder resolutions and then also voting their shares for social objectives. I'm aware of that. I don't know if they offer anything like a social purpose fund in which you could elect to put your retirement money. I haven't heard that they do. They may, but I'm not aware of that. But they have been quite active in the shareholder activity, the proxy voting, and sometimes filing their own shareholder resolutions, with or without church. The biggest actors in that field have been the church funds, the church pension funds, and the labor unions. And I suppose the teachers' retirement funds would be in that same general category of an organization of workers. That's right. This whole business, including the shareholder activity for social objectives, began in the early 70s. That was the earliest example of it. So it's not yet two decades old. And it's not yet in the consciousness of a lot of Americans that it's even something to consider. Yes? I don't think the prudent person rule would apply to Lutheran Brotherhood money market. I think it applies only to people who hold money in trust for the retirement of others, or maybe for other purposes for others, but who hold it in trust. Whereas a money market is subject to all the risks of the market without a prudent person rule. That's my understanding.
So I think they could be not.
Yeah, I'm sure if they saw it as being economically viable for them to do, they could create a social purpose money market fund, just as Calvert has done, and all the others. But my guess is they don't see that as a significant chunk of the market that they serve. They haven't heard that yet.
Anything that goes under an IRA would be.
My
lawyer is not going to do it.
Every state has some insurance regulatory entity, part of state government, by whatever name they're called. There is such. And I think the initial place to inquire for any such question is the state attorney general's office. They are there to serve state citizenry with consumer information, consumer protection, among other things. That's part of their function. And I think you can go to your state attorney general's office with any question like that and say, where can I get help with this kind of question in my state? Well, the minority-owned banks that some ALC and, as far as I know, LCA, other Lutheran money, other church body money was put in the late 60s and into the 70s and 80s, have had a fairly good record, partly because the investments are covered by Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And so there was some hedging against the risk. And then the banks, in turn, the depositor was protected. And then the bank, in turn, was concerned that it get a return so that it could fulfill its obligation and made fairly careful decisions. And yeah, a lot of those development activities have been successful. I've been trying to think of other examples than those. The ALC in the last year of its life decided to put some of its hunger money into not grants, which was the typical way of doing it, but loans to economic development projects around the country. And three were selected. One was minority enterprise in North Carolina with textiles. It was primarily black doing something with making of textiles and employing people in a labor-intensive industry to do that. Another was a farm workers' co-op in South Texas, mostly Hispanics, who were interested in doing something through a co-op mechanism, and they needed some capital. And I can't remember where the third one was, but all of those are too early to know if they've succeeded or not, because they're only a year or two old. But things like, and that was, of course, high-risk money. That was not prudent man guided. That was money that we may or may not get back. But it was an attempt to do something through other than a grant mechanism. Because sometimes the church has resources that can be invested or loaned out with the hope of return and, you know, a recycling or rotating loan fund where you don't have money to make grants. I don't know enough about the history, Don, or the territory in community economic development to be able to answer the question more fully. But ICCR has an alternative investment component that deals with community economic development, and they could answer that if you'd like to phone them or drop them a note. They could give you some examples, I'm sure. My view is, in general, the only reason to turn to a broker or an analyst or a specialist, a professional, is that you don't have time to do the research yourself and you don't trust your own judgments about what research you've been able to do. If you feel comfortable with the goals of that fund and you've read about it, I see no reason to go through a broker. You can go directly. You can send them a check. You can write to them and send. Tell them I need the application form for becoming an investor with you. Yeah, if there's a load, you may still get charged the load.
Mm-hmm. That's a way of avoiding the load.
That's an upfront percentage charge against the each dollar that you invest. But I believe both Calvert Social Fund and Pox World are no load, and I don't see any reason not to go directly to them.
So if they're no load, if you go directly to them, you don't pay any fee, but if you go to the broker, then you pay a fee?
A broker won't sell a no-load fund.
Yeah,
because fund,
that's how they stay in business, is by charging the investor something.
They do
something.
Their own thing.
So Calvert must be a load, huh?
Since we bought it from a broker. Some of Calvert is load, and some of Calvert is no load.
But you now have addresses for some of them, and you can write them directly and see where it goes. I think it's, as with anything else, you have a tax accountant if you don't want to take the time to do your own tax return or don't know how to do it. But if you know how to do it and have the time to do it, you don't need to get a professional. And I think it's the same with brokers for the most part. You use them when you need special information that they have and you don't have the time to uncover yourself. But if you go directly to the firm in which you're investing, there is no commission fee. There may be a load still, but there's no commission, no broker's fee.
Okay.